Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
There's a saying that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is one definition of insanity. There's a related saying that you can't solve a problem with the same mindset that created it. But this is what we do in our relationships all the time. We do both of those things. And I'm constantly telling anyone who will listen that marriage is a completely unique relationship. Now, I know you're never supposed to modify the word unique, but this time I'm going to, because what we've learned in other relationships can help us in our marriage to a certain extent, but there are things that we can't know until we are actually married. And for Christmas last year, my daughter gave me a copy of The Happiness Project, thinking that it would help me in my business. And the author said that when she was researching how to fight right in her marriage, she acquired a lot of books on marriage and relationships. And her husband walked into the bedroom one day and saw this stack of books on the nightstand, and he made the comment that anyone who was looking at that set of books would think that their marriage was in trouble. And it's just this attitude that pathologizes what are completely normal marital experiences. Now, if you walked into somebody's house and a brand new parents and saw a bunch of books on parenting, which is also considered a natural experience, you wouldn't think that anything was wrong, that they were bad parents, or what you'd think is they're just looking for information on how to do it better. So my question is, why is getting expert input on something like parenting okay, but getting expert input on how to have a great marriage or even a decent marriage somehow means there's something wrong? We go to school to gain knowledge for our careers. We take lessons from everything from learning how to drive to playing sports to playing an instrument. But there seems to be some weird rejection of the idea that there's anything that we need to learn about being in a relationship and specifically being in a marriage. So one of the biggest problems with using our past relationships to judge the current one is that you may not have learned what you need to know. And one of the biggest challenges that I run into doing couples work is that you've got a built-in scapegoat, that if something's wrong, your partner is to blame. So, but unfortunately, all relationships are reciprocal. You each put in, you each take out, and what it looks like is a combination of those things. Same input in results in the same output. So joining me today to kind of help clarify what you might be able to do differently and get out of the rat race of the insanity doing the same thing over and over again is Marcus Ambrister. He's a couples therapist specializing in cowboy gestalt therapy, which I'm going to ask him about later. And he's also the author of Pillars of Awesome Relationships, How to Love Your Man When You Are Ready to Kill Him. And I'm assuming, Marcus, that that's also How to Love Your Woman When You're Ready to Kill Her, too.
Yes. And it's funny, my intention in writing the book was to write a book for women. And the book came out really balanced, and the biggest response that I've gotten is from men. And so I was glad to hear that, and the next printing of the book, I'm actually going to change the subtitle.
Yeah, because that's one of the things, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, because one of my challenges is this idea that women either seem to know how to do relationships better, or they're the ones who are responsible for making relationships better. And I think there are a couple of problems with that. One, it gives women way too much power in relationships, and two, it also gives them too much responsibility.
That I agree. And I think where that idea comes from is that women are more in touch with their emotions culturally. And so because they're in touch with their emotions, they're going to communicate emotional content more often. And if men are not comfortable talking about their feelings, then then that's where we run into the problem.
Oh, yeah, and I agree with that tremendously. And there's a secondary thing that I think also comes along with that, is that just because men don't necessarily verbalize or know how to verbalize their emotional experiences, that they aren't having them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the piece is funny. I just met with this couple right before we started talking here, and the piece that came out was that so many men feel like it's not okay to tell the truth, that there's going to be a huge emotional storm that they have to weather if they say something that their women don't want to hear. And I'm not saying that's true, but that's the experience that most men have growing up through high school and college in learning how to be in relationships. There's this piece where it's like, you know, I can't tell her the truth.
That's a really interesting concept, because I wrote a blog post several years ago, which was how to get your partner to lie to you. And way number one was react badly when they tell you the truth.
Absolutely.
Now, and I'm going to say that's true for whether you're a man reacting badly or a woman reacting badly.
Yes.
But that's, and part of it is, how do people learn to tell the truth in a way that their partner can hear?
Yeah. That's a great question. And a big piece of that is one of the biggest problems that I see facing relationships is the issue of self-worth. And all of us, and it's like a rampant problem in our culture, all of us to some degree, deep down inside, we're scared of being a screw-up. And most of the time when somebody says something that is a real genuine problem in a relationship, the response is, I'm not a bad person. And so there's this assumption. Go ahead.
Well, but that assumption is there, I think, that if I make a mistake or I don't know how to do something, then I'm bad or wrong. But it's sort of like the example I was using with parenting. Now, I babysat a lot when I was growing up. I had a brother who was 6 years younger than me, so I had a lot of experience with kids. But I remember when I gave birth to my son and they're wheeling me out of the hospital. And by the way, I was 33 years old at the time. I was not young. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, how does anybody know I know how to do this?
Yeah.
And to me, that's the same thing as being married. How do I know I can do this? But somehow we don't make that same connection that it's okay not to know how to do something.
Yeah, because if I don't know how to do it, then I must be a screw-up. And none of us want to be labeled or judged to screw-up. And so we defend ourselves. And when a problem comes up in a relationship and I say, hey, you keep doing this thing and it's bugging me to death. If you defend yourself, it's like what you're actually defending against is a perceived judgment that you're a screw up. And if you do that, then I'm going to feel like you haven't heard me talk about the real issue that I'm bringing up. And then I feel like I'm not important to you. I feel like you're brushing me off. And then for the races, because then the issue becomes you don't care about me, you don't listen to me, you know, I don't matter to you.
Right. And this is where I work really hard with my clients, because one of the first things I say to my clients when they come in and sit down is that I do not do right and wrong. I do productive or unproductive. Because just because I do it differently from you doesn't mean I do it wrong. But that's that criticism or that perceived judgment that if I don't know exactly what you want or I don't do it exactly the way you want me to do it, then I'm wrong. And then it's we're fighting about the rightness versus the wrongness, as opposed to help me understand what you're asking for and can I do it? And I think this is one of the things, and I get really upset with a lot of my female clients, not just my female clients, women in general, where the idea is, if he loved me, he would know how to do it. And if he doesn't do it perfectly the way that I think he should, then he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So is the, do you have any experience along that with your clients, or am I just completely off base?
No, I'm right there with you. The last chapter of my book, Pillars of Awesome Relationships, is called You Can Be Right or You Can Be Happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to choose. And the one of the hardest skills that people have to learn to have awesome relationships is being able to hear and understand your partner's point of view when you disagree with how they see things. And so, like, I have to understand where you're coming from, how you feel, why you feel that way, and you have to understand how I feel and where I'm coming from and why I feel the way I do. And so we wind up both, you know, really getting our own perspective and getting our partner's perspective. And when that happens, it feels like a magical thing occurs, but it's like something inside of both of us will relax when mm-hmm. we feel heard, you know, and when we feel heard, then things go smoothly.
And it's interesting that you point that out, because, in fact, I had a couple in here yesterday where I had this conversation, because that's what they said, is that they wanted to be heard and understood. And I said, okay, do you want to be heard and understood, or do you want to be agreed with? Because those aren't the same things. I can hear and understand you and still not agree with what you want to have happen.
Yeah.
And that's a completely different, because most people say, well, I want to be heard. And it's like, no, what you want is you want them to agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And with, funny, the first four chapters of Pillars of Awesome Relationships are the four pillars.
Which
and
are?
Which are, the if I tell you what the pillars are, they aren't going to make much sense. But like what they do is they create a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And that mindset teaches us to see everything that comes up as progressive and a chance to step deeper into emotional intimacy.
Okay.
And so with that mindset, it's like we don't get upset when problems come up. And with that mindset, we can, when couples are really working the four pillars well and have this really progressive mindset, they can almost get excited when problems come up, because they know it's a chance to get closer and to make their relationship better and to take that place within themselves that was once filled with frustration or bitterness or resentment and have it be replaced with love and emotional closeness.
That sounds like a great idea, and I like the concept of it, of looking at a challenge, you know, or a problem as a way to get closer, because we're not going to be able to get rid of problems and challenges, even
Absolutely
in the best,
not.
Even in the best possible relationships, stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yep.
and I don't know if it's the romantic idea of once we meet the right person and we get in this relationship, then everything else is just smooth sailing. And I'm going, what world are you living in?
Yeah.
So
the Hallmark world.
Yeah. Yes. The Disney world.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all the problems happen before we live happily ever after. Not, you know, I always.
After. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And even. It's not even necessarily problems. It's just the normal process of, ongoing relationships, building a life together, if you have them, dealing with children, because just as you get one child figured out, they do something different. And if you have more than one child, what worked with child number one isn't going to work with child number two.
Yeah.
So you're back to those drawing books. Yeah. But so talk a little bit about the pillars and how somebody could know whether they're in an awesome relationship or figure out what they need to do to get in one.
Okay. Awesome relationships, do have problems. Every relationship is going to have problems come up. The awesome relationships are the ones where the people have the emotional skills in how to deal with their own uncomfortable feelings and their partner's uncomfortable feelings in a good way. And they've also got the communication skills to be able to address those problems and resolve those problems thoroughly. So they're not afraid of the uncomfortable stuff that comes up, and they've got a plan, and they've got the tools in their toolbox to be able to address the problems. And that's what I want to give people is, so that when problems come up, they're not scared by them, they're not threatened by them. They say, okay, here's a chance. Let's figure out what's going on.
So it's a way of breaking that same thing over and over again and expecting a different result cycle. You're actually offering them a new way of doing things.
Yeah, exactly. And so the first pillar is called, it's not about joy or pain, it's about intensity. And we all want a maximum amount of joy in our life, and we want a minimal amount of pain, but that's not the real choice we get to make. The choice we get to make is about the intensity of the feelings and how intensely we feel our feelings. And so because we don't want, pain in our life, we kind of put a damper on the emotional intensity that we feel. And it's like we want to keep the uncomfortable feelings away, and that unfortunately squashes the amount of joy and love that we feel also.
And I don't think that people realize that if you shut down one type of emotion, one set of experiences, you're going to shut them all down.
Yes, absolutely. And so now the funny thing is people always say, well, I don't want to get hurt again, or, this hurt, it's in the past, I don't want to deal with it. It's never about future pain that we try and avoid. It's always about the hurts that are buried inside that haven't healed. It's
right.
Always about those that we're avoiding trying to feel. And we're doing it by not feeling the hurts that come up in the present moment. Because if a hurt comes up, it's going to bring up the old hurt with it. And so
actually triggered by the current hurt.
Yes.
It's whatever
exactly
we're feeling right now, like you said, is a reflection of something we've experienced and haven't really dealt with.
Yes, exactly. And so when we get people, create a safe enough environment, and I teach couples to create that emotionally safe environment just between themselves so that they can feel those uncomfortable feelings and get the support they need. And that's what we do as therapists, is give the people the support in this safe environment so that they can feel those uncomfortable feelings and essentially give themselves a bigger playing field so that they don't have to avoid those uncomfortable feelings. They don't have to avoid the hurt. They don't have to avoid the shame, but they can feel those old hurts so that they can begin to heal. And then they've got more options in how they respond to things. They don't have to avoid the hurts anymore. They can go straight into them and feel them and get the support. And then there's more of their heart that's available to love and be loved in the relationship.
And I want to talk about that a little bit more, but I want to remind my listeners that you are listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. And I'm talking with therapist and author Marcus Ambrester about what's necessary to have an awesome relationship. And what I'm hearing, and I think what is probably terrifying to anybody else who's listening, is that we can't really avoid, if we want to have an awesome relationship, if we want to have the kind of relationship that everybody says they want, we can't avoid dealing with what's happened to us in our past. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, goodness. Do we have to deal with the past? We really have to. And, like, really what we have to do is make peace with our past.
Right.
So, yeah, we do. There's really no way to avoid it. Because it's a part of who we are, and it's going to come up anyway, whether we talk about it or deal with it or feel it or not. It's part of how we react in every single moment. And if you can only ignore that, you can't get rid of it.
And one of the things that I use when I'm working with my clients, I pay very close attention to words people use, because the words they use are indicative of their thinking, but also the level of emotion with which they're talking. Because I get people saying to me all the time, oh, well, that's past and I've dealt with it. And my response is, I'm going to respectfully disagree, because the amount of emotion in your voice when you talk about it, or the emotion that I see on your face, tells me you haven't dealt with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of that burying, because it hurts. I don't want to hurt, so I'm going to pretend I'm not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But then my interaction with my partner is glaring that something is still undealt with.
Yeah, and that actually speaks to the third pillar. We skipped the second one. We'll get back to that. But the third pillar of awesome relationships is called hurt feelings are like rowdy teenagers. And what I mean by that is, like, when teenagers are being rowdy, you just want them to shut up and go away. And teenagers, they don't actually need to go away. What they need to do is mature.
Mm-hmm.
And when they mature, then they can become, you know, productive members of society and not be such a pain in the ass. And hurt feelings are the same way. We just want them to go away. We want to ignore them and stuff them in a box and throw the box away. But those hurt feelings, we don't actually need to get rid of them. We just need to heal them. You know, and how hurt feelings mature is by feeling them.
Right, which is painful at the time, but if we can actually work through them, it becomes less painful in the future, well, in the present and in the future. And one of the things that I'm hearing that I really want to emphasize is that we all, universally, every one of us walking around on 2 feet has these hurts to some extent or another. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, none of us grows up without some kind of stuff buried inside.
So to have an awesome relationship, to become somebody like that, then there has to be a willingness to deal with those pains, those hurts.
Yeah, yeah. And most of the time we're not taught how to do that growing up, and none of us are taught how to do relationships really well.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the kicker of it. Relationships call us to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is the second pillar of awesome relationships, is bright lights cast dark shadows. And love is the brightest light in the universe. And it makes any unhealed hurt inside show up as a very dark shadow. And those dark shadows don't feel good. You know, they hurt like hell. And
right. So
when we try and, you know, keep them away, when we try and avoid those uncomfortable feelings, what it does is it keeps us from getting closer to each other in the relationship.
So like we prevent ourselves from having the one thing that we say we want to have.
Absolutely. You know, and it's all done outside of our awareness.
Right.
It's like you know, one of the only psychological terms that I use is adaptation. It's like there's a pothole in the road between you and I, and we want to get closer, but there's this big pothole here. So I just, and it's full of pain, and I've got to go straight through it to get to you, but I don't want to do that. So I just sort of throw a camouflage tarp around it, you know, over it, and ignore it. But it's the only path to get closer to you.
Okay, so we've gone through the first three pillars. What's pillar number four?
That love is not about your beloved. Love is feeling the heart of God.
Okay.
And the, so if I believe that you are the source of love in my life, then I'm going to be terrified of losing you. And so if there's a problem between us, then this gets into the fear of abandonment, which we all have to some degree. And so if I get scared that you're going to go away, then my new top priority is keeping you close.
Which means not always dealing with what I need for myself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it may be that I'm going to gloss over something so that you don't get into a painful area of your own. It may be glossing over something or avoiding something or deflecting something because I don't want to get into my uncomfortable feelings.
Now, do you find that is universal, both men and women, that they both do this? Do you think that one gender does it more, or is it different?
It looks different in men and women typically, and we both do it.
Okay.
We both do it just in spades. It's just like we both do it to a ridiculous extent, but it does look very different in men and women.
So what does it look like in a man, for a man? If a man is avoiding and worried about losing their partner, what does it look like?
It depends on what's going on inside the man. If he is really not okay with his own uncomfortable feelings and just wants everything to stay cool and avoid his own heart, then he may work harder on the physical things to try and keep her. He may, and what I see most often is the men getting really defensive. And whenever his woman brings something up, he's going to try and convince her that she's wrong, that she shouldn't actually feel the way she feels.
Right. I hear that all the time.
Or he'll defend himself by talking about the circumstances around what's going on as if to say, see, this is the situation, so you shouldn't really be upset.
Right. Okay.
As a
that
way
makes...
of saying, don't leave me because I was in this situation, is how it
That makes a lot of sense. I definitely recognize that pattern. So what is it that women do?
Typically, I keep waiting to get hundreds of phone calls and letters and emails when I say this. Typically what I see is that women complain and blame their men for not doing what the women want them to do, and it's never... the stuff that they complain about is never the real issue.
Right.
They'll complain about him not helping with housework. And granted, men should do their share of housework, absolutely. But that's not the real issue. The real issue generally is that women don't feel heard and they don't feel fully met emotionally.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so when they do feel really heard, they do feel like their men understand what they're talking about and understand how they feel and really honor how their woman is feeling. A lot of women, what I hear from them is, if I got that, if I felt like I really mattered to him, I wouldn't care if he helped around the house. But the first thing coming out of the woman's mouth is he doesn't help.
Right.
All he wants is sex. Yeah.
Right. The standard dynamic that is made fun of all the time, but there's a bit of truth in that cliche.
There's a bit of truth in that it's what couples generally complain about.
Right, not what's really going on.
Yeah, but it's not what's really going on underneath the surface. And we aren't taught to pay attention to what's going on underneath the surface. So we're taught to, you know, we're not taught to look at our own insecurities and, you know, and take responsibility for those. You know, we're taught to blame somebody else when we're uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's that built-in scapegoat that I talk about where somebody comes in and says, fix my spouse. If you would just fix my spouse, everything would be fine. And my response to them is, I'm sorry, your spouse isn't broken. It's getting people to look at themselves, which is a real challenge because it does hurt. I don't want to look in the mirror and go, oh, that didn't go very well.
Yeah.
So is it just that people who have awesome relationships learn how to do this or are willing to do this? What's the key?
Well, I think we as a culture, we need to be taught how to do relationships really well. We need to, you know, it's like for the most part, all of us learn to drive a car fairly well. And we're all willing to be in that place of being a student when it's time to learn to drive a car. And, you know, and we get around, you know, pretty good. There's some horrible drivers out there, but it's something we all know. And that's something parents usually take pride in teaching their kids to drive well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when parents don't know how to have an awesome relationship, you wind up, you know, with the blind leading the blind.
I agree with that completely, and it's the reason I'm doing this show is because I really want people to understand that we all do this. I mean, I have been what I consider successfully married. I'm coming up on 29 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But part of that was because I had a really, really painful experience in my early 20s where I had to sit down and take a good long look at myself going, okay, what's going on with you? And it was only then, and by the way, guys, I'm not saying I'm perfect. Ask my husband. He'll tell you there are some, I still have areas to work on. But I guess the difference is that I had that experience and I got really lucky with a guy who seems to be able to take care of himself internally pretty well. And on some level, I think it was just luck. But what I want to tell people is it's not luck. It doesn't. We don't have to wait for luck. We can create that if we're willing to look in that mirror, which I know is so, so scary. But even good relationships that we look at from the outside, they're not problem-free. They're not challenge-free. Mm-hmm. They're not pain-free.
Yeah. So, and what I usually tell people is, you know, what do you think would happen if you put 18 six-year-olds out on a baseball field to play t-ball with no coach and no guidance about how to play the game?
Well, I guarantee they're not playing t-ball. They're digging in the dirt, looking at the sky, and doing a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, and so who wins at that game? It's like in terms of baseball, nobody wins because there's no freaking game going on.
Right.
But every team needs a good coach. Every team on every level needs a good coach. And it's funny, when you get into the business world, the most successful people are the people that pay the most for coaching.
Exactly.
And not, you know, you got a CEO, a buddy of mine, just got a CEO of a like pretty good size corporation, and he spends $100,000 a year on personal coaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
he says it's worth every penny of it, and it is.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to tell people. I mean, if you're a golfer, which I'm not, but nobody thinks about spending, you know, having a couple of lessons with the golf pro, and I happen to be looking, because for this show, I was actually looking for this, where they'll spend $1,000 on a game-improving golf club. But when we talk about paying attention to the most important relationship in their life, which is with themselves, and then the second most important relationship in their life, which is with their partner, everybody goes, it's too expensive, or I have to be crazy, or, you know, and it's, but then my answer is when people talk about how expensive it is, it's like, well, have you priced not taking care of this? Have you priced an attorney and all these other things? So, Marcus, I'm so glad that you were able to be on the show today and share your awesome information about awesome relationships. So can you tell my listeners where they can find you, Pillars of Awesome Relationships? And I'm so sorry I didn't get to the cowboy gestalt, but maybe next time.
Okay.
But
absolutely.
How can they find you?
Okay. Everybody grab your cell phone, punch this number in. Area code 615-653-9198. And go ahead and call me right this second as you hear this, and you'll have my number in your phone. MarcusAmbrester.com. But what I want everybody to do, I want everybody to get this book and add these tools to your toolbox. And even if your partner, your spouse doesn't read the book, your marriage will benefit from reading this book. Go to pillarsofawesomerelationships.com. It's all one word, pillarsofawesomerelationships.com. And I will ship a copy of the book out to you. It's available on Amazon a little bit cheaper, but for people that buy it from my website, I autograph it and do a personal inscription on the inside cover that's just for you. And it's awesome. You'll absolutely love it.
Well, terrific. Thank you, Marcus. I love this idea of pillars of awesome relationships. And I love the idea that you mentioned that if you read it by yourself, your partner doesn't even have to read it. But this is what people don't understand, that if you take ownership of your own stuff and you start doing something different, your relationship is going to change. Because you're changing that definition of insanity. And so act now and keep listening to this show. Happily Ever After is just the beginning as I continue to introduce you to people like Marcus Ambrister. And next week I'm actually going to be talking to somebody who is a doctor and a lawyer. I don't think he's an Indian chief, but his name is Charles Rawlings, and he's going to be talking about his book, It Really Is That Complicated. So until next week, stay loving.